So today is the disappearance day of Srila Haridasa Thakura and the day of Srila Prabhupada's sannyas. Haridasa Thakura is the Namacharya, the empowered teacher of the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, although he appeared in a lower family, he was accepted as better than the best of the Brahmins because of his pure dedication to the chanting of the holy name. He made even to Maya into a devotee of the holy name of the Lord, and he was personally glorified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in so many ways, although because he was coming from a lower family he couldn't enter the Jagannath temple. Lord Jagannath in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go every day personally to meet with him. So he's very glorious devotee of the Lord, and the standard of perfection in teaching the chanting of the holy name. He used to chant so many times the holy name of the Lord every day, and even in his old age he didn't want to decrease. So we could speak a great deal about Srila Haridasa Thakura, his wonderful example, but I think I'll instead speak about Prabhupada Sannyas. The Vedic social system consists of four varnas and four ashrams. Four probably called social divisions and four spiritual divisions. The varnas are brahmacharya grahastha, brahmana kshatriya vaishya shudra. The intellectual section, the administrative and military section, the agriculture and trade section, and the helping section. Four occupational divisions, or varnas. And four ashrams, four stages of four stations of spiritual life. The brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And these two systems, varna ashram, intersect like the threads of a cloth crossing in perpendicular style. It's supposed that if one lives for 100 years, then one should spend 25 years as a brahmachari, 25 years as a grihastha, 25 years as vanaprastha, and final 25 years sannyas. Because there are different stages in the human life. A child is not going to be a grihastha. He's going to be a child. And for children, the student life is the natural situation. When a child is young, he can learn and learn and learn. Previously, they used to teach, still even, Sanskrit by teaching mantras. The grammarian Panini has systematized all of Sanskrit grammar into short, short little mantras. It's a unique grammar. It's still studied and appreciated by modern grammarians of many languages for the scientific presentation. And there are even some Sanskrit grammatical terms that have entered English simply because they're so useful So anyway, these sutras, the system was for learning Sanskrit, that first the students would learn these sutras, these mantras that encapsulate the grammar. And they would just learn them by, you know, learning them by rote, by practice. And then once they knew the sutras, they'd know the whole language, so they could just speed right through everything. They would learn that at a young age, because in childhood, the mind is like a sponge. You can just absorb so much. I'm told there was some Sanskrit teacher in America. If you're above a certain age, he won't even, you know, forget it. You're not going to learn Sanskrit. Too late. But the child can learn all these sutras and just move right ahead. Or so many things a child can learn. Krishna and Balaram, they learned everything in a day. They went to the school. Even Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, became a brahmachari and lived in the ashram of Shandipani Muni and learned so many things. One day. And one day he would learn whatever the subject was. So the brahmachari gurukule vasan dantu guru arhitam. The child from the age of 5 years would go to the ashram of the spiritual master for being trained vasan dantu. He would learn self-control of the senses. Now children go to school and they learn how to let their senses run wild. But brahmachari training was how to control the senses and how to act gurorhitam for the service of the spiritual master. Because the real identity of the living being is that he's a servant. So the child would be trained from childhood that my real identity is that I'm a servant of Krishna, servant of the spiritual master. So this was brahmachari life. And some of the brahmacharis would stay brahmachari. They would remain at the ashram of the spiritual master, or they would remain brahmachari for their whole life. They would simply carry on with their spiritual duties and not get involved in family life. Just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he remained brahmachari for his whole life. But then others, with the permission of the spiritual master, would enter the next ashram, the grihastha ashram, married life, generally from the age of 25. If you're 40 or 50, then you're already too old for household life. And before then, too young. An 18-year-old boy, and I think they're like kids. They're not yet suitable. So say from about 25, they enter the household life with the permission of the spiritual master. And being trained as brahmacharis, they would conduct their family life in such a way that the home would be a place of spiritual advancement. Because the husband has to act as spiritual master of the wife. He has to give spiritual instruction to the children also. He has to execute all of his household duties and still make advancement in Krishna consciousness and not be distracted or unduly entangled. So that requires training. And the brahmachari life is the right training for the future grihasthas. They would get the strong training in spiritual understanding and spiritual practical affairs, so that when they entered the grihastha ashram, they would be well equipped. Or if they chose not to enter the grihastha ashram, they would be well equipped to carry on as brahmacharis. But one is not recommended to stay in householder life forever. First of all, no one will be allowed to stay in householder life forever. Mrityu sarva haras jaham. Death will come. Time means death. Our time will run out. And then we'll be forcibly evicted from householder life. Or the household will be taken away. The spouse will die. Or will die, one way or the other. No one can stay at home forever. So the one is recommended that one should not even try to stay at home forever, nor try to stay as long as possible. Rather, panchashodham vanam vrajet. At the age of 50, one should get out. Vrajet is imperative. It means one must, not one may. One must. One must get out of householder life. Why? Because householder life means naturally there will be some attachment, strong attachment between husband and wife. That's natural. That's natural. And in relation to around this relationship, attachment to one's home and the comforts of home, attachment to children and other family members, attachment to the various comforts of home life, and a certain amount of entanglement in various duties of work and household responsibility, which are necessary but which are burdensome. Therefore, even the materialist wants to retire from work. He wants to get free from responsibilities. Although sometimes, once they retire, they don't know what to do with themselves. Sometimes they even die shortly after retirement, simply because they feel that their life no longer has meaning. Their work was their life, and now that they're not working, life is meaningless. So for the spiritually advanced person, there's meaning to life beyond simply working like a donkey. The meaning comes from his eternal relationship with Krishna, from reviving that relationship, acting in that relationship, and developing love for Krishna, which is the real business, the real purpose of human life. So the materialists retire for so-called comfort and happy golden days of retirement. They go to the golf course or something. But the devotee retires for spiritual progress. He frees himself from material affairs, which by the age of 50 become quite burdensome. The young man is looking forward to his career, he's getting started, he's going to make something of himself, he's going to make a mark in the world. But by the time one is 50, these things start to become burdensome. Working and meeting so many responsibilities. And even if they don't feel burdensome, one is advised, no. One should detach oneself from these affairs. Panchashortam vanandhya. By the age of 50. And Prabhupada gives the example that naturally one may feel that no, I don't want to retire. But it's an obligation. Just as a business, if it closes at 5, it closes. Okay, some customer might still come around at 5:30 or 6 o'clock looking to buy something. But when the principle is that the building closes, that the business closes, they close. 5 o'clock, routine work, we close. I'm sorry, we're closed. So similarly, in the same spirit, one should close down householder life by the age of 50. This is the Vedic injunction. Panchashortam. Vanam Vrajet.
One may think, no, my household or affairs are still going on, things are not finished, I haven't wrapped everything up. Prabhupada said, you'll never wrap everything up. You'll never wrap everything up. Just get out. No. Not prematurely. It's not that a newly married man should think, well, now I didn't realize what householder life is, but now that I know, I'm getting out of here. No. One has accepted a duty, responsibility. He has to execute that responsibility. He has to be dutiful. But as it's a duty of the householder to see to the household affairs, at 50 it's his duty to get out. So the next stage is called the vanaprastha ashram. The vanaprastha ashram is meant for austerity and detachment. In the vanaprastha stage, one puts aside the responsibilities of householder life and takes up the responsibilities of spiritual purification and focusing detachment from material affairs and focusing on devotional service to the Lord. In a sense, reviving the focus that he established or that he learned in his brahmacharya life. Again, moving toward single-minded dedication to the service of the Lord without any material encumbrances or responsibilities. This is the vanaprastha ashram. The vanaprastha ashram, the duties of the vanaprastha ashram may be performed in different ways. Vana means the forest, and a vanaprastha is a person who lives in the forest. So vanam brajet means literally that one should go to the forest, and the followers of the Vedic culture used to do that. They used to literally, even if they were kings, go off to the forest and live a life of serious austerity. They would dress in the bark of trees. They would live on fallen leaves and roots and berries. They would perform serious tapasya or austerity to free themselves from any tinge of material identification or attachment. In the vanaprastha stage, the wife is also allowed to accompany the husband. We find that when Prithu Maharaj accepted the vanaprastha ashram, went to the forest, his wife, Archi, followed him and followed the same life of austerity. In the life of the vanaprastha, the first feature is that there's no sex life. In the householder life, sex life is allowed or required. For begetting children, sex has to be there. So sex has its place in married life. In brahmachari life, there's no scope for sex. And in the vanaprastha ashram also, there's no scope for sex. One voluntarily gives up sex life. But in the vanaprastha ashram, the wife may accompany the husband as a voluntary servant and follow the same principles as the husband. We find that when Archie was living in the forest, she gave up all cosmetics. She gave up brushing her hair. These are the sort of principles accepted by the vanaprasthas. The young man wants to look young and handsome. The young girl wants to look beautiful. But in the vanaprastha stage, there's no need. The woman is not going to attract the husband for loving affairs. The man is not going to take part in loving affairs with the wife. Now the business is, we're not this body. We're spirit souls. And the body is just a foreign vehicle imposed upon us. So they would undergo severe austerities living in the forest. The husband, either the husband would go and the wife would stay at home, or the wife would also go. Now it's very difficult to live in the forest. If we suggest to the even spiritual practitioners of the modern day, now go to the forest, live on roots and berries, dress in tree bark, live underneath the trees, no, this is not possible. And in fact, it's practically not possible. Srila Narottam Das Thakur is therefore advised that in Kali Yuga, when one is ready to live in the forest, he should live in the forest like Vrindavan. Vrindavan is also a forest, and it's specifically related with Radha and Krishna. So one should go to the Vrindavan forest and focus on Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada built that Krishna Balaram guest house specifically with the retired people in mind. He used to express great dissatisfaction that the building was being filled with children and young girls and so on and so on, because that was not the purpose. Vrindavan specifically meant for leaving aside family affairs. So that guest house was constructed especially with the idea that people could retire, respectable people could retire with some reasonable comfort to Vrindavan and focus on chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, and engaging in spiritual practice to make their life successful. So one may go and live in a place like Vrindavan. Again, husband and wife. Now we have some retired couples who are actually doing that. They've retired to Vrindavan. They're chanting Hare Krishna, and they've forgotten that we have one godbrother, big businessman in Fiji, but now he's in his older days and he's left his business aside. So these days I'm seeing him and his wife in Vrindavan, and they're doing bhajan, chanting Hare Krishna, and very happily situated in Vrindavan. Or another system of vanaprastha life is that the husband and wife may travel to different holy places. In India there are so many holy places like Vrindavan, Mayapur, Varanasi, Rishikesh, Haridwar, Tirupati, Guruvayur. There are so many holy places all over the country. And the retired couples, retired man or retired couples, may go to these places, and in every temple there's some arrangement for prasadam. There's some arrangement for staying for 2 or 3 days. The charitable householders establish dharmashalas where people can stay, or the temple itself establishes some guest house where people can stay. And the pilgrims stay for some days and see the deity, get enlightenment from the local Brahmins or saintly persons who reside in such spiritual places, and purify their existence. Traveling means you can't get very attached. The less you take with you, the easier it is to travel. And they, in this way, reestablish their identity as eternal servants of Krishna. Well, that's another system of vanaprastha life. And another system is the system adopted by Srila Prabhupada. You stay at home for some days and then you go out. And then again come home, see how things are going on, perhaps give a few words of guidance, and again go out. Prabhupada was going to Jhansi in Madhya Pradesh and starting some preaching activities there. There was sometimes success, sometimes not so much success, but he was going. At that stage of his life, rather than simply stay at home and do business, he was going out to Jhansi, attempting some preaching activities, sometimes coming back and seeing to the home affairs, and then going out again. So Prabhupada described this system. He said that you go out for some time, come back, go out, come back, go out, and then one day you don't come back. So this is the third stage, the Vanaprastha Ashram. And the Vanaprastha Ashram serves as an intermediate stage between the married life, Grihastha Ashram, and fully renounced life, sannyas. Sannyasastu mahabaho dukam aptam ayogata. For a person who's not fixed up in Krishna consciousness, well established in Krishna consciousness, sannyas is a source of trouble, unhappiness. Dukkam aptam ayogata. Why? He's taken a vow to give up his family. He's taken a vow to give up material affairs. But within his heart, he's lamenting. What about my wife? What about my children? How are they doing? Is everything all right without me? Maybe they need me. I need them. I'm not happy. In so many ways, he may feel that I've renounced this world, but I'm still, actually within my heart, I'm attached. And then sometimes he may go back also. Prabhupada told the story that some godbrother was taking sannyas, and the wife came to the ceremony and dragged the sannyasi away. So sannyasastu mahabaho dukkam aptam yogata. Yoga yukta munir brahma achirena nadigashchati. But one who's fixed up in Krishna consciousness very quickly makes progress. So the sannyas is meant to be accepted by those who've achieved a certain purification of heart. And that purification of heart especially means detachment from householder life. Detachment from wife, detachment from family. So to provide a sort of bridge for that attachment, the detachment, the Vanaprastha Ashram is recommended. So that it's not simply sudden, that one day I'm a householder, the next day I'm a sannyasi, then 3 days later I'm a householder again. That's not wanted. So the idea is that there's a program for gradual detachment and purification of heart. So that the husband and wife may stay together, but there's no sex life, because sex life is the number one attachment. No sex life. But they may stay together. And they're not staying together for comfort at home. They're simply now staying together for increasing their Krishna consciousness. And then in the mature stage, the wife returns to her grown sons and is under their protection. Because Striyam Naiva Svatantra Arhasi, according to Manu Sangita, a woman should never be stranded. She should never be stranded by being independent. An independent woman will be exploited or will be feel helpless, she'll feel in difficulty. Therefore, in her childhood, she should be protected by her father. In her youth, by her husband. And in old age, by her sons. In the Vedic culture, the sons are trained to be very responsible. I have to, it's not that I only have to do what I want to do, but I have to take care of my mother also. That was their, after all, the mother takes care of us when we're helpless children. So when we are older, it's our duty to take care of the mother. This is Vedic civilization. I know my publisher in India, devotee publisher, he's till recently he was living with his wife, his two children, his mother and his grandmother. So he was taking responsibility, not just wife and children. But responsibility means my mother is there, my grandmother is there. So he was very responsibly taking the charge of all the family members. And this is the Vedic system. Not that just, you know, hey, this old lady's in the way. Man, what do I want her around for? No. Not that the mother is sent to some institution somewhere and the, you know, husband and wife now embark on their happy married life. No. The son has to take the responsibility, and that's his duty. And the retired mother also performs a very important function by being an example of detachment in the midst of householder life. Although living at home, the retired woman is not engaged in sense gratification. She's not going off to different social functions and dressing up and enjoying. They would be engaged in Krishna bhajan, in serious devotional activities. Vishnu Priya, the wife of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was so serious that she was chanting Hare Krishna, and every time she finished one round, she would put aside one grain of rice. Then at the end of the day, however much rice there was, that she would take as her meal. Not more. So it's not that the man would go off for sannyas and the woman would go back home and party. The sadvis, tapasvis, they would live very seriously, executing devotional service under the care of their sons. Prabhupada gave the example of one business family. The mother was practically the head of the family, not exactly head of the family, but she was so senior and respected by everyone. And she made it a rule that all the sons had to see the deity every day by the order of the mother. Mother is so respected, you can't disobey the mother's order. So they're all big businessmen with their own companies and everything. They had to see the deity every day. So the retired women would provide the example of saintly detachment and devotion, and in that way provide a spiritual example for the other family members, and for her own welfare be focused on the service of Krishna and go back home, back to gardening. Meanwhile, the husband would travel. And there are different stages of sannyas also. One sannyasi lives a little bit outside the village, and the former members of his family provide some food for him. So he's not feeling like, oh, what do I, how will I live? Builds a little hut, and he goes. But in the more advanced stages, he travels. Because he gains that confidence that Krishna is everywhere. Krishna will protect me, Krishna will maintain me, Krishna is feeding all living creatures, he'll feed me also. So in the Parivrajakacharya stage, he travels from place to place. And especially, of course, they cultivate their spiritual life and they spread Krishna consciousness for the welfare of others. This is the duty of the Parivrajakacharyas. So this sannyas ashram is a very important function in the Vedic social system. For the perfection of one's own spiritual life and for the welfare of others. It distinguishes the Vedic system from materialistic life. Materialistic life, one lives at home and dies at home in bed surrounded by his loving family members. Or else, more often these days, he dies in a hospital someplace. But in any case, they would try, the materialistic person aspires to live to an old age with his loving family and die in illusion, thinking in terms of wife, home, children, family. Janasya mohoyam aham mamiti. But the higher orders in the Vedic society would voluntarily leave home. They wouldn't wait to be kicked out by death. They would voluntarily leave home for complete detachment and for spreading Krishna consciousness for all the other members of society. They would live very simply and austerely, and they would make it their business to benefit others. So Srila Prabhupada, our Pandaracharya, set the example of going through all four stages of the Vedic social system. Of course, in his childhood he didn't live specifically in a brahmacharya ashram, but he was trained by his father. He was performing the ratyatra ceremony, he was having sankirtan. Prabhupada said, practically everything I learned from my father. He said, only this I learned from my spiritual master to publish books. Everything else he'd already gotten from his spiritual master, from his father, and it was solidified by his Guru Maharaj. He said, but this I learned from my Guru Maharaj, to publish books. So then Prabhupada entered the householder life, and although he told us that he wasn't so thrilled with his wife, he very responsibly executed the duties of a householder. But then, as I mentioned, later, he was already involved, even in his householder life, with the disciples of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and assisting in the preaching. They were sannyasis, he was a householder. He would provide some funds, and from his business life, he had business connections, so he would take the sannyasis around to different business acquaintances for preaching and raising funds for Gaudiya Math. And he was, in fact, living quite intimately with some of the sannyasis of the Gaudiya Math at one point. Srila Sridhar Maharaj was living upstairs and Prabhupada was living downstairs. So even in householder life, he was associated with the other devotees in the spiritual circle. But then later he thought of beginning preaching activities, and as I mentioned, he was going to Jhansi. But he told us that he was having dreams. And in this dream, recurring dream, his Guru Maharaj was calling him and telling him, calling him to take sannyas. Prabhupada said, "I was horrified. I have to leave home and take sannyas." But his Guru Maharaj was calling him. This more than once, this dream came. And finally, by the encouragement of some of his god brothers, he accepted the renounced order of life from Srila Bhakti Pragyan Keshav Maharaj and became a sannyasi, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj. And as a sannyasi, he remained focused on the service of his spiritual master, particularly the duty of teaching Krishna consciousness in English. And while his godbrothers were giving more attention to temples and making disciples and so on, Prabhupada focused particularly on writing and publishing books. Sometimes he was staying in Delhi, then staying in Vrindavan, finally in the Radha Damodar temple. And his main work was writing and publishing. He started this Back to Godhead magazine in 1944 for preaching the message of Krishna consciousness in English. And as you know, of course, that he started in his household. And he was going even to the tea stalls trying to sell even a few copies of Back to Godhead. Later, after accepting sannyas, he was especially writing books. In Back to Godhead, he was going on with some difficulty. But he got the advice that books will be still more permanent. And so he took up this work of writing Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is celebrated among the Vaishnavas as the most important of the Vedic literatures. Nigamakolpataror Galitam Palam, the ripe fruit of the tree of Vedic knowledge. Saram Saram Udagatam, the cream of the cream of Vedic wisdom. And all of the Goswamis and followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have given special importance to Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priya. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Vedic literature, and it's especially dear to the Vaishnav devotees of the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada took up the most ambitious task of translating the entire 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam with commentary, elaborate commentary in English. And that also, English being not his first language, he admitted that there could be so many difficulties in the presentation. But he was hopeful that just as when there's a fire in the house, the neighbors somehow or other get the message across, that somehow he would be able to get across the message of Krishna and the honest reader would receive the message and understand its importance. So he took up that work of writing, and not only writing, but the entire work was in his hand. The book is on the title page, it says published by the League of Devotees. Someone asked Prabhupada, what was that League of Devotees? Prabhupada said, basically it was me. So he himself was doing everything. He said, one man show. He was writing, he was editing, he was taking the book for being typeset, he was proofreading, he was getting the paper, bringing it to the printer, getting the book printed, and then distributing the copies. He was doing everything. Then he was trying to send copies to important people also, that they should take interest. And finally, he got the opportunity to come to the West. He explained why he came to America. He said, some of my godbrothers were sent by his Guru Maharaj to England to spread Krishna consciousness. But they failed to accomplish very much, and their Guru Maharaj called them back. So Prabhupada said, I thought that, well, if I'm going to fail, at least let me fail in a new place. So actually America was, by that time, becoming the most important, or had already become the most important or prominent country. And Prabhupada thought of going to America. And somehow or other, by Krishna's arrangement, the invitation came, he got the permission, he persuaded Sumati Maharaji to provide passage. He survived the journey, and then he came to America. And in America, you want this higher? In America, he had no money, he had no real contacts, he only had the address of this one son of a kind of acquaintance. And he wound up in this little town, Butler, Pennsylvania, and did some preaching there and stayed with this family. But then he thought that, well, what am I doing in this little town? The real place is New York. And he set off, really with nothing, to the heart of the materialistic society, New York City, with just some clothes and some books, and completely depending on Krishna. This is sannyas. When the qualities of sannyas are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, abhayam sattvasam shuddhir jnana yoga vyavastiti. The first qualification is abhayam, that one should be fearless. One should think that I may go anywhere and Krishna will protect me, Krishna will maintain me. It's not that if I have no sponsor, I have no friend, I have no money, I have no credit card, then what will I do? And Krishna is there, Krishna will protect me, and Krishna will maintain me. So Prabhupada, in that spirit, went to New York in old age, and really with nothing, but simply depending on Krishna. This is sannyas. Prabhupada describes that if one is afraid, then how can he live as a sannyasi? That purification of heart should be there so that he thinks, all right, let me depend on Krishna. I can go anywhere. Parivrajakacharya. Parivrajakacharya can go anywhere. He knows Krishna is everywhere. Krishna is there
to take care of me wherever I may go. So Prabhupada went to New York and he began his activities in a very humble way. He had no money, so he was living in the most abject circumstances, practically penniless. He was living just by selling his books. He said, I would somehow sell some books and get money to eat. And wherever he would go, wherever he would meet, he would speak about Krishna. So gradually some young people were attracted and began attending his classes, and one thing led to another, and now this Krishna consciousness movement has spread all over the world, and it's spread because Prabhupada took that step. He could have stayed at home with his wife and family members. He had his sons also. They could have taken over the business and seen to his care in his old age. He could have lived at home and either read the newspapers, as so many old men do, or stayed home and read the Bhagavatam and worshiped the deity. But Prabhupada took this step, bold step, of leaving home. And it's because he left home that we have a home in this Krishna consciousness movement. It's because he left the small family that we now have a very large worldwide family of Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur also makes this comment about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he left the small world of wife and home and family for the larger world of Krishna and humanity, greater humanity. So this was Srila Prabhupada's courage, boldness. Abhayam, the business of the sannyasi is fearlessness, sattvasam shuddhi, purification of existence, and jnana yoga vyavastiti, to be very well situated in knowledge in devotional service. Prabhupada received that name from the Vaishnava society, Bhakti Vedanta, on account of his deep knowledge in the science of devotional service. So armed with that transcendental knowledge, Prabhupada accepted the renounced order of life, dedicated himself for publishing and spreading the message of Krishna, finally came to the West and then traveled all over, even having established the society. He could have stayed in one place and let everyone come to meet him, or sent his missionaries to different countries. But he himself traveled all over the world to encourage us, to set the example for his followers, how a sannyasi should live, how a preacher should engage in service. That also, and now quite an elderly age, traveling and preaching, traveling and preaching, traveling and preaching, traveling and preaching. So this was Prabhupada's very ideal example, and we should try to pick up this example and not think that this is something only for Prabhupada. Only Prabhupada could leave home, only Prabhupada could take sannyas, only Prabhupada could travel to foreign, unknown places. But it's, we may not be to the same standard as Srila Prabhupada, but we should also try to follow in his footsteps. Prabhupada had a phrase, do as I'm doing. So, again, not abruptly, But we should try to see this example and understand that this is meant for us also. For those who are householders, it will also be a very good example for the next generation. Our sons will be the next inheritors of the legacy. And they should also understand that as they enter householder life, they're not entering the program for the rest of their life. It's a time-bound contract, a time-bound situation. And after living for so many years in householder life and raising their children, they also should follow in the footsteps of their predecessors and gradually retire, accept the vanaprastha ashram, accept the sannyasa ashram, and make their lives successful and spread this for the benefit of others. The Krishna consciousness movement offers meaning for those who are advanced in age. In the materialistic society, old people are largely useless. They're regarded as useless and burdensome. They cost money, they have medical expenses, you have to put them somewhere to live, either endure them at home or put them in an institution. You have to feed them, you have to put up with their complaints. So they're described as Bhagavatam, they're regarded like old, worn out oxen. You know, they don't do any work, but they just eat. Or even if they have money, they're well to do, they don't really know what to do with this portion of their lives. They go off to some retirement community and watch television or play golf. And their existence is really very sad, because it has no higher purpose. They can't enjoy like young people, although they'd like to enjoy, and sometimes they try to enjoy as if they were still young. They paint themselves and do operations and somehow or other to try to keep themselves capable of some sort of youthful enjoyment, which is really out of the question. And young people look at them and think, you know, what are these foolish old people doing? So it's very unfortunate that in our materialistic society, old people have this sort of fate. But for the devotees of Krishna who are following the Varnashram system, old age is a time of new opportunity. And as one grows a little older, one is entitled to free oneself from the burdens and responsibilities of householder life and engage in new adventures in the service of the Lord, traveling to different holy places, or living in a holy place, or traveling and preaching all over the world. So this system Srila Prabhupada showed by his practical example, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also taught Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yoga, knowledge, renunciation, and pure devotional service. So we should pick up this example, be inspired by it, and follow it for our own welfare and the welfare of others. Hare Krishna. Any questions?
Now, we have opportunity not to get this knowledge of what lands, but on the west, for example, here in Slovenia, it's not in bad. I'm a little more worried because how much I know is nobody takes care of this.
here in Slovenia, you're concerned because these varnas are not instituted, they're not part of the culture or the practice. So then, what's the problem?
Well, the problem is because I'm a little bit afraid of what's going to happen.
So you're a little concerned, afraid what will happen?
Yes, because it's not enough, how much I know, it's nothing done in this.
Because nothing's done in this line. So we have to start. One thing is that if we don't do it, you can be afraid of what will happen. You know, to die at home surrounded by relatives and, you know, household animals. And then come back and start all over again in another body. So whether there's a formal arrangement within the society or whether there's no arrangement, we should take it as our duty. If there's actually there should be, we should be thinking toward the future. And in our Krishna consciousness movement, we should be molding things in such a way as to make these sort of transitions, make provisions for this sort of progress through the various varnas. Because we're a relatively new society, we have to do this for all the varnas. We have to provide schools for the children. We have to provide counseling and job opportunities and devotional service for the grihasthas. We have to provide similarly for the retired people. We have to provide for the older women whose husbands may die also, or whose husbands may retire from family life. And we have to, in this way, provide, you know, the full picture of varnashram. That's our duty. But we shouldn't think that unless, you know, some committee makes an arrangement or unless some institutional provision has been made, we won't be able to do this. Actually, it depends more on our willingness. When our will, just like Prabhupada showed that, he went to Jhansi and there were people there who were interested. There was opposition also, but everything was there. When he took sannyas, somehow or other, Krishna provided. So we should have confidence. I can do this, and actually I'll find that there will be new opportunities, new life actually. Even thinking about the old Vedic system, how they used to travel from holy place to holy place. Even within our own society, there are so many temples. And the retired people can travel from temple to temple. After all, after the age of 50, they should be the most experienced members of the society. If anyone has any questions, anyone has any doubts, anyone wants to know how things should be done, these are the members who should know, because they'll have been practicing for so many years. The householder advice, they've been householders now for so many years. And in so many ways, they should be experienced in Krishna consciousness. So when they come to a temple, it should be a great opportunity for the members of the temple. And here are some people who are very experienced devotees. They know the philosophy, they know the practice, they're stable, you know, they're not confused young people trying to figure out what to do in their life. They're mature. And they're available for service. Now we find so often that, you know, people have gotten married and they don't have so much time for the direct activities of preaching or carrying on the mission of the society. They have to carry out their household responsibilities. And if we ask, can you please serve in the temple, they'll say, well, yeah, I can, but, you know, I have to make a living somehow or other, and if I'm in the temple, then the temple has to provide. So then, alright, the temple has to spend for the services of these young people, because they're family people. Which is not really ideal, but anyway, it happens like that. But the retired people are free. Well, they have no children to send to college or to support. They have no home to pay the mortgage on. They have nothing. They're just coming. And they're available to serve the deity. They're available to preach to the devotees. They're available for any service. The elderly women also, even when they, whether they're traveling with their husbands or whether they've returned home, now they're available for service. You know, they're not taking care of their three babies or doing all of those things. Now they have no other engagement but to chant Hare Krishna and to render service. So they're a great asset, actually, to the society. They're a great asset. So if they're traveling from temple to temple, they'll get new inspiration. Oh, here they're doing this, and here they're doing this, and here they're doing this, and this, and this. And here there's this opportunity and that opportunity for preaching. And when they preach, people may come and be attracted to hear this message. So just the fact that we have our temples provides opportunities for our retired people. Beyond that, there's all of India. Mayapur is there, Vrindavan is there. These are ideal places for retired people. And there are so many holy places. They can travel from one to the next. There are our own places, our own temples in different parts of India, Tirupati and this place and that place. And there are established temples that have been there for generations and generations. So the main thing that's needed is the willingness of the people to retire, of the devotees to retire, to say, all right, you know, I've done that, I've fulfilled my responsibility, and now I have a new responsibility. And Prabhupada mentions that before one becomes too old, because the body starts to decline, and there's no guarantee that we'll be fit and ambulatory, that we'll be able to move around or function. So before the machinery starts to fall apart and become inoperable, while we still have life in our bones, we should take this opportunity to retire and get out. Then Krishna will do the needful for further progress. The main thing is our own determination. Yes, I must do this. Srila Prabhupada did this. It's the Vedic injunction. It's actually the best thing. So I have to do it. And the society, as far as possible, should organize to assist in every way. But with or without such assistance, we should be determined, I must do it. And Krishna will take care of it. Okay. Yes.
My question is, from your explanation, I understood that the wife should or travel with husband.
She may. The wife may travel with the husband.
Or stay at home. Do
or stay at home.
Then now in ISKCON we have ladies gurus. Maybe also. Maybe. So by whom they will be protected? I cannot see them. Where they are sitting?
If some lady serves as guru?
Yeah, she has to travel or what?
No. May or may not travel. But she'll be, the disciples are there to take care of. Or sons may be there to take care of also. Generally, the women don't take up that very strenuous service, but sometimes, like Janavadevi had that. Otherwise, they grew by their example.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita someplace that one should take up sannyas even violently. Violently doesn't mean that somebody should grab him kicking and screaming and, you know, throw his pot, his cloth in an orange vat. Not that sort of violence. But it means that there's some, by leaving home, usually one creates some unhappiness for the family members, especially the wife, maybe the children. How can you leave us? How can you go? Especially in the Vedic system, for the whole life, the wife is devoted to the husband. So for the husband now to leave home is a great blow. Great love. So that's, and the husband may also feel that, what about the children who may still be looking to me for help or guidance? And if I'm not at home, what will happen? So from that point of view, it's a great separation, a big move, and it may cause trouble for others. But one has to do it nonetheless. Just as taking a bath is troublesome in the winter, just as cooking is troublesome in the summer, just as so many duties may be difficult, one has to accept this duty of leaving home. One should think, well, I'm going to have to leave anyway. If I die, who will take care of my wife? Who will take care of my children? Am I indispensable? Is it that without my divine presence, everything will go to hell? Somehow Krishna will provide. As a householder, it's my duty to try to arrange things in such a way that provision will be there. But finally, I have to go. Voluntarily or involuntarily. If I don't go now, I'll be forced to go anyway. So let me go. There was some story, one of the Acharya, Jamuna Acharya or somebody, in the line of Ramanuja, who was thinking of taking sannyas, and he thought, but who will take care of my family members in my absence? And then he saw that one of those little tick-tick lizards was on the wall, and it stuck out his tongue and grabbed an insect. He understood Krishna is providing for every living entity. And left. So this duty of retiring from family life for the vanaprastha ashram and finally sannyas should be performed on the basis of knowledge. And knowledge nurtured by pure devotional service, by chanting Hare Krishna regularly, avoiding the offenses, by following the regular principles, we'll become strong in our spiritual life, so that when we have to take these important steps, we'll have the strength to do so. Naturally, one is still attached, but one has to break that attachment. Not that one should say, well, when I look in my heart, I still see that I have a little bit of attachment, but I better stay. One has to think that whatever attachment is left, let me break it. That's what Vanaprastha ashram and finally sannyas ashram are for. They're for breaking attachments. Just like marriage is for making an attachment. Right? A boy or girl are tied together. There's supposed to be some attachment for family responsibility. And now, retired life and renounced life means breaking those attachments. Because as long as I'm attached to family life, I can't leave this world to join my real family. Do I have to do that? Yes? Yes, in some place in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that if wife, the association of wife and home are congenial for Krishna consciousness, then there's no need to leave. So that's, first of all, true for the young men. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu extraordinarily left family life at a young age, and he still had his elderly mother and his young wife, completely dependent, and still he left. But when that's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we may not be on that platform. So if the family is Krishna conscious, then especially for the young men, there's no need to leave family life. Better to perform one's duties within family life in Krishna consciousness. But in the mature age, and Prabhupada has said this so many times, one should leave. If the wife is Krishna conscious and the association is congenial, then the wife may continue to accompany the husband in vanaprastha life. They may live together in Vrindavan, or they may travel to holy places together. But sooner or later, separation is inevitable. Either he'll die or she'll die. So, not waiting for that, they should voluntarily renounce family life. That advice is for the younger people. They may not need to all become sannyasis, leaving home abruptly. But for the older people, retirement is recommended in so many places in Prabhupada's writings. He's confirmed this view.
As you said, that the woman should be protected, shouldn't be independent in any state of life. We can see even in our society, different consciousness, where maybe most of women are they're not married, so this principle is not really working.
Well, in Krishna consciousness, so yes.
My question is then, and in modern society, so much things of feminism and all these diseases of that. Feminism, all these things. So, how to apply it in this society?
Let's see, the question is that in our Krishna consciousness movement, so many of the women are single.
Yeah, they're like independent.
And then in the greater society, I'm not quite sure of the relationship, but feminism is there and the women are independent, so how to adjust? How to apply this? First of all, in our ISKCON society, it's not that the women are simply independent. Generally, those we provide some ashram, and we try to provide the needs for the women and proper engagement. Not that, all right, run wild, do what you want. But they're just as in the other religious societies, there are communities of women who are dedicated to the service of God, or who are working sometimes in the schools or sometimes in other departments of the church. They may not be married, but they're dedicated for God's service. So our women should be like that. As far as possible, they should be married. Some husband should be there to take charge. But if they're not, then Krishna is the better husband. Krishna is the better husband. They should place themselves under the lotus feet of Krishna and be engaged in the service of Krishna. And the other members of the society should see that their needs are provided for. And they shouldn't have to be independent. The materialistic women, or the women in the materialistic society, are unfortunate because they want to be provided for. They have their needs, emotional needs, practical needs. So some man should be there. So then they have to somehow catch someone and get him to provide for her. And then typically the man simply wants to enjoy her company and then go. So he gets, you know, the good part of the deal he enjoys and dumps her. And then she has to go find someone else to take care of. Or else she has to be out on the job market working for somebody, which is the business of the Shudras. And she's, you know, maybe thinking she's very fortunate that she can work like a man. But actually it's a kind of misfortune to have to work and not be provided for. So it's not very nice out there. Even I was saying the other day that some of the pioneers in the feminist movement in America who really got the whole thing going, and they dedicated their youth for the movement, for freeing their sisters. And then, you know, when they were like 40 and so on, they kind of looked around, no husband, no children, you know, and then it was too late. So we should provide nicely for all the women who have taken shelter of our society. Husbands should be there, if not husbands, then the other devotees should arrange to see that they're provided for. In Mayapur, I think they've arranged, you know, there's some arrangements for the older women in Vrindavan, some ashrams there. And gradually these things happen. Okay.
Like it's mentioned in Vedic scripture that a woman gets the benefit of spiritual activities of men.
A woman gets the benefit of?
Yeah, she also gets spiritual benefit that she's following. In my situation, I have a partner and she's maybe not so changing system, you know, but she's taking the process and she respects Krishna. She has a positive attitude to Krishna consciousness. Basically following the principles of not meat eating. Some not everything perfectly, but once she said to me that that she will
she'll get all your spiritual credit.
She will try to me that she will try to understand your future
consciousness. Yes,
this,
that's good.
She said this business. It's to me that she will.
That's
maybe
good.
She's not so much right now, but maybe I don't know how it will be in the future. Maybe,
but that's good. That's natural. Your partner is Krishna, is not so Krishna conscious, but she's following you and she's pretty much following the principles and she's favorable to Krishna consciousness. And she's saying that, well, you know, I may not, anyway, whatever I get, I'll get through you. That's good. That's actually natural for a woman. And she'll, you know, according to what the husband's doing, that has a lot to do with what she'll do.
Yes.
You know, if her husband is running a business, then she, you know, gets involved in helping with the business. If her husband has a farm, she helps with the farm work. If her husband is a scholar, then she helps with the, you know, the typing or the editing or in some other department of the the project. So naturally she gets involved in the same work that the husband's involved in. If the husband is working, is serving the deity, she helps in serving the deity. Naturally, in the natural arrangement of things, the woman will follow the direction in which the husband's going. So if she's expressing that, that's good. Just encourage her, guide her. See, this is the idea. This is very good.
For drama show, I asked her if she would, he asked me if she would be an actress, so she said, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. That's very good.
Because of me, she said.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I asked him how would he like that.
No, that's very good.
Okay.
I mean, that's nice.
But she's not chanting 60 rounds.
Anyway, but she's following. you could have a lot worse, you know. Well, you can go off and you can go off to your temple, but that doesn't mean I have to go off there. And, you know, just because you think that it's something, it doesn't mean I have to think that it's something. So it's very nice. She's, you know, following, she's assisting. That's very good. Just encourage her, guide her. That's nice. We wish you well. And perfect questions, perfect answers. Brahma Tirtha's life was like that. You know, she was kind of only in it because he was in it. You know, she was at least not disrespectful because it was what he was doing. But because he was doing it and she started doing it, she became a very, very nice devotee. Modern Vanaprastha economics. If the question is whether, after all, the Vanaprasthas, if they're going to travel, it will cost money. So where will it come from? Should they save money for the retirement? That's good. For the householders to put something aside, thinking that in the future you'll have this. Generally, people do that for their retirement. They keep some money aside and they're thinking about, you know, when they're going to move to in America, it's Florida or something. Live comfortably. So if the married people keep something with that in mind. Otherwise, yeah, somehow it will come. Yeah, if they're doing service, my prediction to you is that the householder couples who want to retire and render service in different temples will find that all facilities will be there. That's my prediction. If for no other reason than speaking strictly from a pragmatic financial point of view, they'll be cheap. You know, a retired couple compared to a young married couple will be so economical that the temples will fight over them. And apart from that, if they've really been serious devotees, their association will be sought after. People will be, you know, begging them, could you come to our temple? Could you come to our temple? And they'll be coming. People will be so excited, oh, they're going to come. Because they're serious, they've practiced, well established and inspired in Krishna consciousness. So people will be so eager for them to come. The ticket will not be an obstacle. That's my prediction. It may not be necessary to say it. Yeah, of course, grihastha economics is not my strong part. Generally, the grihasthas save something also. But even if they have no savings, if they have Krishna consciousness, they'll have everything.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the other ladies who go to the, who go back to live their son.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a responsibility, is it considered their responsibility to take care of their grandchildren also?
Is it considered the responsibility of the retired elderly women to take care of their grandchildren? It's not something I've thought about. But now that you bring it up, it seems to me there's a natural affection, and that the elderly women will want to be involved with their grandchildren. I was just with some family, I forget where it was. Oh, I know where it was. I have a disciple in New Jersey, Madhupati Das, and he's supporting his parents. And they were very happy because their other son's children had spent the last 3 days with them, and so they were, they had the company of their grandchildren. So generally, the grandparents are very happy to have some role in the life of the grandchildren. And the grandchildren generally are very affectionate to the grandparents. The grandparents are usually more indulgent than the parents. But it's not that the elderly people should simply be taken advantage of. That the young people go out on the town and dump the kids with the grandparents and go up and enjoy their senses. That's not the idea. But it would be natural. Generally, the grandparents, the grandmother will advise the granddaughter in so many ways how to do things, how to see through her responsibilities. But that's a great asset in family life, actually. The grandmothers are a great asset in society. They help bring up the grandchildren, and they help their sons and daughters also. So they're a very great asset. Therefore, in Vedic culture also, there's so much respect for them. How did I join Prabhupada? Well, first, are there other questions on this topic? I don't want to just dump the topic and go to something else. Yes?
I have different opinions about one book of Prabhupada, Life Comes From Life.
You've heard different opinions about the book Life Comes From Life. But that's also not on this topic, though, is it? Anything else on this topic? Yes. It seems like I'm talking about a fairyland, because everyone has to work to 65 to get their pensions, and therefore there's no scope for vanaprastha and sannyas. Therefore, we, of course, I'm presenting the ideal system, and there may be sometimes some, you know, it may not match exactly. What happens may not exactly match our expectations, but it's not unrealistic. First of all, it's not that without my pension I can't retire. The materialistic idea of retirement is a very different thing. You know, they want to have a certain standard of life that requires, you know, good money. But our way of life is different. You know, what an ISKCON householder can live on is different from what it takes. You know, we don't need so much for the movies, so much for the this, and so much for that, and so much for meat, and so much for going to the show, and so much for, you know, we minimize our, this is actually the secret, financial secrets. Financial secret in every ashram. Keep your expenses low. Because spending less is always eager, always easier than earning more. It's always a lot easier to spend less than to earn more. So even in family life, by keeping our expenses modest, life becomes much easier. And when we're ready to retire, it doesn't require that, unless the state supports me or unless my previous employer supports me, how can I live? It's not required. But somehow, we're dependent on Krishna, not on the government, not on IBM or whoever. We're depending on Krishna. Krishna is there. He will do the needful. He will do the needful. India is always there. India, by comparison to Western standards, just looking at it economically, is so cheap. It's so cheap. Raja Bihari Prabhu, one of our devotees there, his mother actually contracted Alzheimer's in her old age, and he brought her to Vrindavan. He was staying in Vrindavan. He brought her there, and there he could afford, you know, a place for her, a servant for her, everything, and the cost was so minimal, because India is like that. It's not a very expensive place. You know, a man who could barely afford an apartment in America with the same money could have, you know, a place, servants, everything. And especially where we have our temples, not very costly to live. The saying is, where there's a will, there's a way. You know, if we have that desire, we have that determination, Krishna will open up the doorway for us. If a man's always been brahmachari, is there any guideline as to when he should take sannyas? No. Actually, he doesn't even have to take sannyas. He may stay as a career brahmachari. In Gaudiya Math, there are brahmacharis, you know, they're like 80 something or other, and they're brahmacharis. Because for the householder sannyas, it means detachment from family. Brahmacharya didn't even get into family life, so there's not that much to get detached from. So brahmacharya, sannyasi, there's not much difference. It's not that one should think, wow, I'm 38, I better make a decision whether before it's too late I get married or I take sannyas. Stay brahmacharya. At BTG we have our Yamaraj Prabhu, who's been working on the magazine and working in BTG for so many years. Brahmacharya, happy. Brahmacharya is serving. He's not heading toward sannyas. He's certainly not headed toward family life. He's just dedicated Krishna conscious brahmacharya. So there's not this, shouldn't be this feeling of tremendous pressure that now I'm brahmacharya, you know, if I don't take sannyas, then what? It's not a great issue. He can take sannyas or he can remain brahmacharya, whatever is most suitable. Okay. Okay. Your question sounded shorter. What was your question? Life comes from life. Different opinions about it. What Prabhupada said about the book, Life Comes from Life? I don't recall. He said very much about it one way or the other. What's the question? What's the question? Some people are saying it's too heavy for public preaching. Well, Prabhupada was heavy. And he was publicly heavy. Prabhupada was not, you know, so oriented toward public relations. You know, to making a smooth sort of presentation that would be publicly unobjectionable, that everyone would say, oh, that's nice. Prabhupada used to enjoy speaking very strongly. Yeah, he would publicly say the heaviest things. It wasn't that just when he was meeting with, in secret with some confidential followers, he would disclose that Darwin was a rascal. He was happy to have us publish it in the pages of Bhakti Godhead. He was strong in so many things. Very strong. He spoke strongly about the women's liberation movement. Yeah. He knew it wasn't going to be popular. He said what he wanted to say. Not exactly on the topic of women's liberation, but one woman reporter asked him, why do you shave your head? Probably asked her, why do you shave your legs? Then he told her, better to have warm legs than a cool brain. Those who think that the book is too heavy don't have to distribute it. Those who can carry it can distribute it. Yeah, your question, how I met Prabhupada? I joined ISKCON. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have one of those dramas. You know, I was walking down the street and there he was. I joined ISKCON. Prabhupada had left to return to India for his health after his heart stroke. Then 2 months after I joined, he came back. Came to 22nd Avenue, and that's where I met him. That's the story.
What's the most impression of the
other crowd? Oh, I couldn't say, you know, what was the most.
Or something.
You know, I think that the closest association I had with Prabhupada was by my service. You know, I was sometimes with Prabhupada physically. I wasn't, you know, a big shot actually in Prabhupada's time. I wasn't a sannyasi, wasn't a GVC man, wasn't a temple president. But And those were the people who were, you know, the top of the heap, had more association with Prabhupada. But, you know, just by staying in long enough, like, gradually I saw Prabhupada here, and saw Prabhupada there, and sometimes here, sometimes there. But I think that the closest association I had with Prabhupada was by my service. Prabhupada was writing. He considered that, from one point of view, his main contribution, writing his books. And I was involved in the production. Sometimes in the beginning I was typing and transcribing, and later managing book production, and later proofreading and editing. So I was connected with Prabhupada in that service that he was doing. And I was, it would mean I'd always get, you know, we would always get the hot from the oven manuscripts before anyone else got to read the books. We got to read them because we were working on them. So we were connected with Prabhupada that way. We would be hearing his tapes or reading the text. And to edit, you have to go through it very carefully, very carefully. You have to get absorbed in it. So I think that I was more connected with Prabhupada by my service than I was by whatever physical association I had with him from time to time. Sometimes, of course, we got that association that had its own great value. But of the two, I think that the service was more important. One time, when the press was in Boston, Prabhupada was in San Francisco and the Rath Yatra was coming. So the press manager had the idea that all the devotees in the press could jump in a van, drive across the country to San Francisco, attend the Rath Yatra and deal with Prabhupada, and then come back and carry on. It takes a couple of days to get across America to drive straight through, 2-3 days. So maybe they asked Prabhupada, or Prabhupada came to know of it. And Prabhupada said, why are they planning to do that? They should stay and do their service. And Prabhupada didn't think, no, it's very important. They have to come, they have to be with me. But it was more important that we should stay there and perform that very important service for Prabhupada of producing his books. Prabhupada also, he said that in his own life he had very little association with his Guru Maharaj. He wasn't a sannyasi, he was in householder life all the time that his Guru Maharaj was present. And he, you know, again wasn't one of the big leaders there. So he was mostly, doing his pharmaceutical business, doing his householder duties, and only very little association with Guru Maharaj, once at Radhakund and some few occasions. That's a few hours, you know, all together maybe. And there were other godbrothers they had, you know, they were just like living with their Guru Maharaj. You know, he'd be staying in Mayapur, staying in the temple, and they'd be with him, and they'd be serving, and they'd be doing, you know, they'd always be together. But Prabhupada, having dedicated himself to the service of his spiritual master, got all the blessings of his spiritual master. And after his spiritual master disappeared, Prabhupada wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, he said, I feel that he's always present with me by his instructions. And that same dedication he gave to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that he lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So the physical association of the spiritual master is very much appreciated, but his instructions and his service are still more important.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna Maharaj said that you should never say about Srila Prabhupada that he's heavy. This is offensive. Maybe he meant too heavy? Otherwise, guru means heavy. Guru means heavy. Literally, guru means heavy. So perhaps that's what he meant. You should never think that, you know, Prabhupada is too heavy. Yeah, that this book is too heavy. This, what he said is too heavy.
Maybe he meant this for us, not for disciples.
We should never resent that the guru is heavy. The guru is heavy, but that's good. It should be heavy. We don't want a lightweight guru. We want a heavy one. Yeah, not heavy in the sense of being harsh. Again, not too heavy. It's not that he was excessively heavy. Even if he was exceedingly heavy, he was not excessively heavy. Yeah. Something else?
When we are on this topic, sometimes I'm not your devotee. Sometimes I'm trying to follow Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I'm saying something to go heavy. So then I know that I have to figure, but still I'm trying to help. But many times, not only me, but the general impression in our society is that okay, Prabhupada could say like this, but we cannot imitate. Or so how can
sometimes it's said that Prabhupada could be heavy, but that we shouldn't imitate Prabhupada in his presentation.
I'm also aware that I cannot imitate, but still. Somehow I would like to
sometimes complete. Prabhupada said that there was Prabhupada visited, I think, the Indian embassy in New York along with Kirti Rajguru, and Prabhupada was speaking with one official, I suppose it was, very strongly. Prabhupada spoke with very strongly, and then later Prabhupada said to Kirti Raj, he said, I can speak like that, but you cannot, he said, because I am old man. An old man can get away with it. You know, he can say things, an old man can say things, and, you know, people have to, especially in Indian culture, if an old man says, you know, however heavily he speaks, people have to defer, because he's out of respect for the senior. So Prabhupada said, I am old man, I can say these things, but you cannot. And not that a young man who tries to speak that way to an older person would be regarded as rude or impertinent, whereas an older man speaking to a younger person can be as heavy as he likes. So we should take into account what our position is. It's not that we're in the business of being rude, arrogant, falsely proud, and so on. On the other hand, we have a message to deliver, and it's our duty to say things as they are. Prabhupada told Giriraj Maharaj one time, he said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised, I never compromised, nor should any of my disciples ever compromise. We don't water down the message to suit people's tastes. We have a message to deliver, and, you know, people may take it or leave it, but we have to deliver it. And we may try to deliver it tactfully, or we may deliver it strongly. Prabhupada spoke strongly, and he was pleased when his disciples would speak strongly also. we discussed before, that when Sannyasi challenged the scientist very, very strongly, and Prabhupada was very, very pleased. So it's not that we've taken a vow that only Prabhupada can speak strongly, but I'll never speak strongly. We also should speak the message of Krishna strongly, but not arrogantly. There's also in Bhagavad Gita that one should speak the truth in such a way that it's pleasing. Not pleasing or not pleasing, we have to speak the truth. All right, should we end here? Any other questions?